Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, and welcome to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Here today, going to get a little salty. Ben Jacobson. I'm sure you've heard that before.
Never.
Many a times. Jacobson Salt Company. And, you know, it's a fascinating thing. Salt, it feels eponymous in food. Whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing, you know, whether or not people are trying to beat low sodium diets or know about finishing salt, it is a very, very important part of culinary arts, culinary history. Yeah. But a lot of people don't even understand what the hell salt is or how it's made, how it's hand harvested. So we're going to tell them today. So Ben Jacobson grew up Virginia, Vermont, in the wilds, baking bread, your mother's spinach souffle.
Yes, absolutely.
What was culinary life like for you then?
Culinary life was, it centered around home and my mother's home cooking. And, she was a great cook, not a fancy cook at all, just a, you know, great home cook. And I mean, you brought up spinach souffle, but that's literally my favorite thing that she makes still to this day. And it's so tasty, and she puts a little bit of pepper in it, and I just love it. And my favorite thing is to have it, you know, with a meal, but then also have it leftovers the next day directly out of the souffle bowl from the fridge.
Yeah. Well, you say pepper. Is that the arch nemesis, the antithesis to salt?
Pepper is a wonderful complement to salt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But is salt itself, I mean, it wasn't until, you know, after school when you actually went and studied in Scandinavia for your MBA that you found this relationship with salt. How did that happen?
Yeah. You know, I discovered good salt while I was living in Scandinavia. My girlfriend at the time, bought a package of salt for 60 kroner, or the equivalent of $10. And I was a student at the time, and I was like, what are you doing? We can't spend, you know, 60 kroner on salt. And it was a lot for salt. I tried the salt and it was life-changing. It was literally, and this is what I'm doing now, which is I still kind of slap myself and pinch myself pretty frequently because I feel really, really lucky to be doing what I love. But salt is one of those things that it's, you know, I tasted it and it was so transformational for the food that, I mean, it's the single most effective way you can elevate each bite of food. And not only effective, but affordable. It's like, yes, it's expensive for salt, but, you know, we're talking, you know, less than pennies per serving. So it's still, you know, when you compare that, you know, great salt to a wonderful bottle of wine, you know, you can get the best salt in the world, a chef jar of our salt for $45, or you can get a, you know, great $45 bottle of wine, and that's wonderful, but the bottle of wine in my house will be gone in an hour or less.
Oh, my house as well. Yeah, we're on the same page.
Yeah, and you know, but, you know, I buy a chef jar of salt, and it would last, you know, a month or two, and so that's, you know, there's a little goes a long way.
Well, let's talk about that first experience with salt, you know,
yeah.
that you know, Scandinavian epiphany you had. What was it? Did you just huff it, snuff it, take one bite, and life was changed, or was it on a dish? I mean, how was it applied?
It was on a dish. I think we were, what were we making? I think we were making meatballs, and in Scandinavia, of course, we had brown gravy of some sort, and boiled potatoes, and we put it on the boiled potatoes, and then we had a little currant jelly, and put it on the boiled potatoes. I think that was the first meal I had the salt with, and it was just like, you had this delicate crunch that contrasted perfectly with this soft boiled potato and butter, and it just was so good. It was wonderful.
So what does the word finishing mean to you? Finishing salt?
Yeah, you know, it's finishing. I mean, to me, it's I guess using less salt during the actual cooking process and more salt at the very end. You know, rather than salting your pasta or your water heavily that you're boiling your potatoes in, you boil the potatoes in, you know, a lightly salted water, and then you finish once the potatoes are plated or in a serving dish, you salt them then. And you just get this beautiful textural contrast that you're able to, you get this light, delicate crunch that's so nice when you're, you know, different textures and are nice when you're having different foods, and especially when it highlights and brings out, you know, all sorts of different salinity of the food that you're eating.
So, I mean, this was in your mind, be it the forefront or back burner.
Yeah.
And you went through, got your MBA, went into tech, moved to the West Coast. But when did you decide salt's going to be my thing?
Well, I never really decided it was going to be my thing. It was always kind of pulling me, to be honest. And I was always interested in it. And I moved back to the Pacific Northwest and thought it was strange how, you know, the region had evolved from a culinary standpoint so far. And a lot of that evolution was based around the best raw ingredients you can get. So the best fruits and vegetables in America. Sorry, no offense to the rest of America, but I mean, we have an abundance, you know, in the Pacific Northwest, the best fish, you know, some of the best grains, hops, you know, wine, beer, etc. And but the one thing that brings everything together, that tied everything together within that, you know, from that culinary standpoint, which is salt, wasn't being harvested in the Pacific Northwest, let alone really the U.S. There are a couple of other salt harvesting companies, and a couple of them have popped up since we've started up, which is no surprise. But it's you know, salt harvesting is something that has largely been forgotten in America. And so anyway, so moved back to the Northwest, looked at companies like Malden from the UK, and very similar climate, similar levels of precipitation. And so knew that, you know, that precipitation and climate wasn't a factor in making good salt. So that had me scratching my head even more, and wanted to figure out how to make good salt. And really it was a trial and error process of 2.5 years. It was very, very easy to make bad salt. And bad salt is just bad. It's nasty. It's like bad beer or bad wine. You just don't want to eat it or drink it. But it was difficult to make good salt. And so, you know, there were no guidebooks or blogs to follow or anything. So it really was just a trial and error process over a couple of years.
Well, you talked about salt being a common thread,
yeah,
amongst all those other, you know, food movements, wine, beer, but water as well. And it's a very important part to making salt. And let's actually just talk through the process of how do you actually make salt? Where does it come from?
Salt comes from, you know, the salt that we make comes from seawater. We harvest, we have a facility right on the Oregon coast in Neatarts Bay, which is, it's an amazingly beautiful bay. I'm getting cold chills just thinking about it.
I am, but I think it's just because of the flu.
it's gorgeous. Some of the world's best oysters are farmed in Neatarts Bay, and, you know, oysters being bivalve shellfish, they, you know, are constantly filtering the water on our behalf. And it's an exceptionally clean bay as well. You know, we have very little runoff into the bay. So first and foremost, our water is some of the best in the world. Plain and simple, point blank. And I've tested 30 spots along the Oregon and Washington coast, and where we are is simply the best.
I mean, what do you test for? Alkalinity, salinity?
We tested for all of that, but I also ended up making salt from 30 different spots along the coast, the northern coast of the U.S., and compared the salt made from each spot you know, to its against one another, and much like you would compare wine from different terroirs. There's an absolute difference in the salt or the, you know, the result that you get out of different inputs.
But how do you actually harvest and make the salt?
Yeah. So first and foremost, we start with the best water possible. We filter it through a gravity fed sand filter, into holding tanks, and then we move it into boilers. And whenever we move the water, we filter it. So we end up filtering it about 8 times before it even goes into our final process. But we filter the water, boil it to remove the volume, and also very importantly to remove the calcium and the magnesium that give a lot of sea salts a very bitter taste. And if you taste our salts, it's a very kind of clean and briny taste, with, you know, no bitter aftertaste whatsoever or astringency on the backside of your tongue. And that's a very deliberate, step on our part. We wanted the salt just to shine on its, to let, you know, salt, to let, help food shine rather than getting in the way of that. And once the brine has been reduced at that point, we then move it into large custom-made, stainless steel evaporation pans, and over a very low temperature the salt crystals form over a period of time, and salt crystals fall to the bottom of the pan. We then harvest the crystals with a custom-made salt harvesting tool, and then drain the salt crystals and then dry them. After they're dried, we hand sort every piece of salt that goes out of our facility, and then we hand package everything.
Talk about meticulous.
For better or worse.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, the shape of salt, too, you know, finishing salt or Jacobson salt has a structure to it that's unlike table salt, kosher salt. What makes it special, and what is that structure?
It's, what makes the structure is a combination of the minerality of the brine that the salt is actually made in. So how much calcium, how much magnesium is in it, and then the time and the temperature that in which the salt is made. You know, there are infinite numbers of combinations that you could take down that road. Our salt is really has the appearance really of shaved ice, is kind of an analogy I like, and it's just it's shimmery. It's shimmeries. It's very. I'm shaking it here in the chef jar.
Shake it even closer to the microphone. Do you hear that short salt shake? I mean, that's not the sound you get from a salt shaker.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It sounds like, yeah, I'm shaking shaved ice really, and it's gorgeous, and it's a really delicate flake. You know, we get pyramids, which a lot of folks like, but you know, it's also just, we also get a lot of flat flakes that are like shavings of ice, and they're gorgeous, and it's a really, really delicate crystal. You compare our salt to Malden salt, and Malden is, you know, typically the salt that chefs are replacing in their kitchens, with our salt, which is amazing. And you know, our salt is definitely a little bit more delicate of a crystal than Malden, has a bit cleaner of a finish. And appearance wise, it has almost a shimmer. Whereas Malden more appears kind of white and almost chalky.
Yeah. You know, I just ate a piece of salt, and often you'd be like, wow, that's salty. I mean, yeah. as abstract as that sounds, salt is salty, but I mean, you can eat a piece of salt. Like, you can take a flake out and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And understand, you know, how minerally, how it has a different, not just texture, but flavor entirely of anything you... I mean, it's its own component. It's not just salt in a dish.
Yeah. I mean, you can eat it straight out of the jar, and it's amazing. And that's amazing to me. And I do tastings all the time, and here I am eating a piece of salt, and...
How is your salt, when you go to the doctor, how is your salt?
I haven't been to the doctor in a while, but I do exercise quite a bit. And, so I'm not worried about it. And, you know, as long as everything in moderation and everything in balance, should be good.
Well, we're going to talk about the steps you took to build Jacobson Salt and the crazy amounts of non-moderation you used to cart water back and forth to Portland until you realize Manifest Destiny should be by the bay. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Uh-oh. Welcome back to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Chewing with your mouth open.
Yeah, you caught me with some salty black licorice. This stuff is amazing.
Thank you.
Jacobson salt. Yeah, stuck everywhere, but I don't care. So this is a collaboration you did with Quinn Candy. Jamie Curl?
Jamie Curl.
Of Quinn Candy. Also in Portland. Hold on, I'm just going to save it.
Is your mouth watering right now?
It is. Luckily, they can't see us on the radio, but I do want to say we are both sporting our Jacobson salt caps.
Yes, sir.
Check out the merchandise on the site because it is, I feel quite dapper as a host right now. But salt, again, can happen in so many capacities throughout the industry. How did you start selling salt to, you know, the public, to chefs?
Yeah, it was, you know, truthfully, it was not by design, and I didn't set out to start a salt company. It was, I loved harvesting salt, and I loved good salt, and I wanted to figure out how to make great salt. And so once I did, at least, you know, I think we got it to that point. Then, I put a little brand around it and wanted something that I would be proud of, and didn't know what the heck to call it, and was going to call it Oregon Salt Company, and that was lame, and bunch of other stuff, and ended up calling Jacobson Salt Co. because I've got friends who are winemakers, and one of my friends' wineries is called Groshaw Cellars, and that's his last name, so I said, that's possible.
Yeah.
So anyway, slapped a name on it and then brought it to a vendor fair at New Seasons, which is like a local Whole Foods in Portland, Oregon. And New Seasons was our first customer, and they said, we love it. And the way I demoed it was I brought a fresh tomato from my parents' garden, sliced it there on a cutting board with a knife, sprinkled salt over it, and gave it to him. And they said, we love it. We want a case for each store. How soon can you get it to us? I was like, holy shit. How am I going to do this?
How much were you making at that point?
Oh, at that point, I was maybe making 2 or 3 pounds at once.
Yeah.
And so this order was, what, 33 pounds?
Yeah.
So it was, I had to quickly figure stuff out.
Well, I mean, let's talk about volume, because at points you were transporting, because you were making it in Portland.
Yeah.
You were transporting from, the bay.
Yeah.
How many pounds at a time? Thousands of pounds of water.
Thousands of pounds. I mean, at the very most, I was moving 9,000 pounds of water in a rented Penske truck.
Well, what's the yield on that? 9,000 pounds of water makes X amount of salt.
I'm horrible at math. 9,000 pounds of water. let me get back to you, and yeah. I'll do some quick math here. It makes a fair amount more than you would actually think. We get about 3 ounces of salt for every 2.5 to 3 ounces of salt for every gallon of water.
Yeah.
So whatever that is times times that.
We'll let the listeners do the math.
There's a surprising amount of salt in seawater. Yeah.
So then, from selling at the market, there's obviously another sect of people rather than the general public, and that's chefs. Were you approached by them? Did you go in thinking that they needed this for their restaurants?
No. Again, it just kind of happened. I was approached. The first ever chef that uses our salt was Justin Wills, James Beard nominated chef in Oregon on the coast. And he reached out to me over Twitter of all places and said, "Hey, heard about your salt."
Yeah.
Exactly. And want to try it. So we connected at some point and he did, and he still uses it, which is wonderful. And then it really just spread from there. I think Jason French from Portland of Ned Ludd was the second chef, and Portland chefs started using it. Then Seattle chefs and a bunch of chefs in San Francisco, New York now, Chicago, L.A., and it just really has just spread through word of mouth.
Yeah, and let's talk about application too, because you must have gone around and tasted your salt on certain people's dishes so you could, you know, best explain how to apply liberally or not salt to dishes. So what have you eaten around the country with Jacobson salt on it?
Baked eggs at the Breslin. Chef April Bloomfield uses our salt. At Oliver restaurants, Breslin, Spotted Pig, Salvation Taco, and John Dory, and then also Tosca Cafe in San Francisco. But baked eggs at the Breslin are fantastic, and they finish it with our salt, and it's wonderful. I love eggs. They're just to me, it's almost like the perfect food. They're protein packed. They're portable. They're healthy. They're fully renewable.
Well, I mean, you wrote to me too that one of your favorite things to put salt on is simply eggs and toast.
Totally.
I mean, how do you make your eggs and toast? Is there a specific way?
No, there's, I throw a couple of slices of bread in the toaster. When it's out, start to butter it to where it melts a little bit. Fry an egg. Just put some oil in a pan, fry the egg, and until the edges of the egg white, get kind of golden brown and crispy. But then the center of the yolk is still a little bit runny, and put it on toast, and then a little bit of salt and good to go. And it takes, 4 minutes tops, and it's easy, it's quick, it's super tasty and healthy, and
it just sates the soul.
Totally. Yeah,
and it's so simple, toast and eggs, and salt really transforms that in a way. But sometimes you're out and there isn't that finishing salt, but you make these amazing pocket-sized tins. Is that what you had in Scandinavia? Were they small little like sachets of salt that you walked around with all the time just in case?
No, I didn't have those over there. But they are wonderful. Yeah, it's nice to be able to bring a slide tin with you, wherever you go, to a restaurant or to a barbecue or what have you. And it's one. I love going out to eat, and it's tough to go out to eat and have under-seasoned food. And so it's just nice to bring good salt with you wherever you go.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, do you ever put out this giant chef's amount of salt on the table while you're dining at,
No. that'd be far too rude.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about these collaborations again, because starting with Quinn Candy, the salty black licorice harkens back to Scandinavia.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a cool thing. It's not just like this very imaginative, poof that happened.
Yeah, no, it's salty black licorice I discovered in Scandinavia too, and it's wonderful. In Northern Europe, it's quite popular, and After that I started the salt company, I was like, huh, what, you know, I wonder if we could do a salted black licorice, because I love it and I used to, you know, buy it all the time and I lived there, and started looking around and couldn't find it anywhere in America. And so found a candy maker in town and said, hey, I want to make this happen. And we've got a little bit of salt, so let's make it happen. And tested a bunch of recipes and trial and error over the course of a few weeks, and ended up with this wonderfully rich, kind of almost caramelly black licorice. It's nice.
And it's amazing, and it's addictive. Like, I had a hard time giving it away for the holidays. I found myself dipping my hand in there, having a whole bunch. But I mean, you're working with other industries too. I'm assuming Pinot Noir. You know, obviously a huge grape in Oregon, and you have a Pinot Noir salt. How is that made?
The Pinot Noir salt is made with Groshaw Cellars Pinot, and we made it with John Groshaw because John used to let me use his forklift when I was moving 10,000 pounds of water off of my rented Penske truck. And aside from that fact, he's a great friend and makes incredible wine. So we actually infuse, we pour the wine, reduced wine, into our salt pans, and then you can smell it. It smells like a nice glass of wine.
Mm-hmm.
And then the salt crystals actually form with the wine, very slowly. And then after it's done, then we spray even more wine over it and then let it dry even more.
And they're beautiful. I mean, like the blush that, you know, the color of that salt is just,
it's gorgeous.
And you see pink salts, you know, Hawaiian pink salts. You see these black volcanic salts. This is just a really fun and interesting way, too, to also bring different colors and flavor profiles to salt itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
What else? We have lemon zest. We have ghost pepper chili.
Yeah.
We have white truffle. So you're having fun with this stuff.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. And they truly are just fun. And one thing I didn't bring today, which I'm really psyched about, is our Stumptown coffee salt. And it's wonderful. It's just this rich. It tastes like a caramel almost. I know I keep bringing that up, but it tastes wonderful. And one of my favorite things to do is, and it's super easy again, is slice an acorn squash, put a little bit of water in the bottom of the pan, scoop out the seeds of the squash, butter and brown sugar, score the squash, and bake it, and then finish it with the Stumptown coffee salt. That's wonderful.
Yeah. What other kind of flavor profiles do you think pair well with salt that you might infuse salt upon?
In the future?
Yeah.
Well, we're working on a couple.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that.
Excellent. Well, we'll keep watching.
We're working on a couple that I'm really, really psyched about, for sure.
There's a chocolate bar, you know, sitting in front of us.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
The chocolate bar is came about as a result of a friend of mine, David Briggs, and I were having beers in Portland. David's a chocolate maker and owns Chocolat de David, and an impossibly difficult name to pronounce and spell, but it's spelled XOCOLATL David, and his chocolate is amazing. And so we made, and David was a pastry chef before he made chocolate. Super, super talented guy. And so we said, hey, we should do a chocolate bar together. And said, yeah, that's awesome. So he uses our mineral salt. And our mineral salt is a little bit more mineral rich, has more calcium, more magnesium than our flake salt does. And it's really being used by chefs to replace kosher salt. Ava Jean's, a restaurant in Portland, uses only our mineral salt in place of kosher salt and our flake salt, period.
Well, I mean, let's talk about the difference between sea salt and kosher salt.
Yeah.
I used to think it's just because one's hollow and one's not. But, I mean, it's more than that. What is the true difference between?
I mean, kosher salt is a highly industrialized, processed ingredient. It's a standardized product, which is fine for some applications, but you compare the taste of kosher salt to the taste of a good sea salt, and there is no comparison, plain and simple. It's kosher salt tastes, like an industrialized product. Tastes bitter. It tastes fake. It doesn't taste like the sea at all. Whereas a good sea salt tastes like the sea and tastes briny, and it washes your mouth with flavor.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you get kickback from the kosher salt board? Is there, you know, like...
I get no kickback from the kosher salt board.
No, no.
I think they probably don't like me, but I don't think we're doing anything to... I don't think we're even a blip on their radar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so can people make salt at home? I mean, it seems like such a simple thing, but the way you explain it, such a thorough process. Is there a simplified way to actually maybe understand the process and do it yourself?
It's easy to make salt at home. It's easy. It's very difficult to make good salt at home, though. You know, good salt requires equipment that we had to invest in, requires all sorts of filtration and then, you know, time. And then, you know, I've ruined several good pots because, you know, salt is highly caustic and will rust everything. And I unfortunately know that all too well. But it's, you know, so it's, we've learned by trial and error, and I've ruined several good stainless steel pots because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about the actual facility you process in, because after years or after some time in Portland, transporting water back and forth, you moved to the Bay.
Yeah.
And you found an old oyster farm, converted it into the business itself. I mean, do you give tours one? And if people came and saw the process, I mean, what are they seeing in that bay? Obviously, there's the beautiful water. There's probably an oyster bed. But, I mean, what is it about the air and the terroir of that place that translates so well into your product?
The bay is so pristine and it's so clean. You know, it's not a bay that's used for recreational purpose, really. You get a lot of people that are crabbing on the bay. A lot of oyster farmers, obviously. And by a lot of oyster farmers, I mean 8 oyster farms total. So that's a lot in the bay. So it's an incredibly pristine place that, is just kind of untouched. And when people think of the Oregon coast, they don't think of Neatarts Bay, which is good. Because that means a lot of folks aren't going there. We don't give tours yet. We plan on starting tours in May at our facility. But it's, you know, it's nothing fancy. We're a tiny little company, and as of December 1st, we just started paying for health insurance for all of our employees, all of our 12 employees. So not a lot, but it's something I'm really proud of. And, you know, I guess all that is to say that we're taking tiny steps every single day that we can, but it's not a fancy operation, and it's not, you know, it's not full of shine and glamour. It's you know, we work hard out there, and it's we make, I think, some of the best salt in the world.
Yeah. There's shimmer.
Absolutely.
There surely is that. And so you have that bay, and you talk about terroir, but like wine, are you looking for other water sources, other bays, other locations to, you know, have other facilities?
Quite possibly.
Yeah. And we'll leave it at that. But if you have not tried Jacobson salt, I mean, you're going to have that Scandinavian epiphany that Bendit himself. Please go check it out. Ben, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And I can't wait to be out in Portland in May. Hopefully I'll be on your first tour.
Let's go eat.
Excellent. Fantastic. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.